Hey guys, welcome to Unpopular Opinions with Nick. On this podcast, we will be discussing all things culture, politics, lifestyle, and current events. Come along for the ride. All right, we've got a big show for you today, guys. We've got vax mandates, whistleblowers, sick outs, 10-year-old emails, and DOJ weaponization. Sounds like some Democratic chaos. Let's dig in. Welcome back to Unpopular Opinions with Nick. Thanks for listening, you guys. First things first, I'm real curious. Has anyone noticed that when Democrats are in power, prices tend to skyrocket? Like, it's absolutely insane. Biden gets into power, gas shoots straight up. Obama, same thing. Granted, he took power in the middle of the housing crisis, but even after he fixed it in his second term, gas was still crazy expensive. And, I mean, do we all, I mean, I don't say all, because there's probably younger listeners on this podcast, but Jimmy Carter in the 1970s, do we remember learning about that in high school? How there were gas lines and major shortages and excessive energy prices of everything? I'm starting to see a Democratic trend. I don't know about you guys, but it's absolutely insane. I could definitely go for some mean tweets and low gas prices right now. I believe inflation in the major sources, like energy, is up 40 to 60% right now, which is most of people's budgets, not to mention the grocery store. But unfortunately, that's something we'll have to talk about at a different time. We've got a lot to get to in this podcast, so we're going to dive right in. We've got authoritarians left and right, and they see that the American people are kind of fed up with it. They're standing up. They're pushing back against these power grabs, and this is just making these authoritarians double down even more, and they're trying to push and push and push as hard as they can while they have the institutional power barely to do so. So we've got two types of authoritarianism going on right now. We have the actual authoritarianism, the policy being made by these just evil authoritarians, right? Joe Biden, Gavin Newsom, the new mayor of New York City, I don't remember what her name is, but Whitmer, all of them. They want as much power as they can. They want to control every aspect of your life, okay? These are the authoritarians in power. But we also have cultural authoritarianism that's even, in my opinion, probably even more insidious. Because cultural authoritarianism, it invades where laws do not, okay? If there's a law, you know, you can get away with, you know, like speeding, which I think is a stupid authoritarian law. It doesn't harm anybody, and it's really just a revenue-generating function for the government and for police forces. But those, you know, you can speed, not get pulled over, whatever. But the cultural authoritarianisms, now everyone's an enforcer. Everyone is trying to get you with a gotcha moment. Everyone's trying to pressure you and call you out online and air all your dirty laundry and get you canceled. We're going to get to that more towards the end of the show. When we talk about John Gruden and Dave Chappelle. But you have to fight authoritarianism wherever it is. You know, everyone said that Donald Trump, he's a Nazi, he's a fascist, he's an authoritarian. He was none of those things. If you look at his actual actions that he took, the laws that he passed, none of it was authoritarian at all. Even with the vaccines and COVID, when people wanted him to take authoritarian governmental power, he said, no, this is for the states to decide. He didn't have it. He didn't pass any sweeping federal mandates. He didn't try to wield the power of OSHA to force people into getting, you know, wearing masks or putting vaccines in their arm. He said, no, these are state issues. And the mainstream media ripped him up and down for it, for not being authoritarian enough, for not wielding government power. So we've got the authoritarians in actual legislative power. We have authoritarians in our media who are basically partnered with the government. They run cover for the Democratic Party because the Democratic Party and the media are aligned completely. So you have two things that are supposed to be checks on each other. The law, the legal process, the people who make laws, president, Congress, all of them. And then you have the media, which is why we have the First Amendment. The First Amendment is meant to be a check on the government. Now they're together. They're basically in cahoots, to use an old term. So now you have basically government-controlled media running cover for the Democratic Party. That's a problem. This is one of the things that you see when civilizations fall into an authoritarian, dictatorial-type government. Okay? You see it. Look anywhere that has fallen into communist power. Venezuela. Socialism. Venezuela, they took over the media first, and then their authoritarian regime was able to come in, control the narrative, control the flow of information, and take over, and their people couldn't do anything about it. So they want, these people want to control your information. They want to control what you see, what you read, what you hear. They want to control where you move, where you live, what you do. They want to track you everywhere you go. They want to remove any ability you have to survive without the state. They want to remove your power of self-defense. They want to take away guns. Why do they want to take away guns? They're going to say gun violence. Well, the first thing I will tell you about this is gun violence, on average, kills anywhere between 30,000 and 40,000 people a year. 60% of those are suicides. Okay? 60%. So now we're looking at less than 15,000. Less than 15,000 gun deaths per year, okay? And they're going to call this a crisis? We have more people die from car crashes, okay? But guns in the hands of responsible citizens, which is what 99% of gun owners are the number one deterrent from a dictatorial authoritarian government. Okay? So watch for those three things when these authoritarians come, and you're going to see it more and more as they get more and more desperate to people waking up for this. They want to force you to get the vaccine. They want to force you to say the words that they want you to use. They want to, you know, they want to control your speech. They want to remove your ability to defend yourself and have to rely on state-sponsored protection, namely the police, who, you know, I defend the police. They put their lives on the line. They do an incredibly tough job. But guess what? When seconds count, police are only minutes away. So do not rely on anyone else for your safety. But the government wants to get you on the dole. They want to get you on the take. They want you to rely on the government for everything. And then once they have you, they can control you. Don't let them do it. Be vigilant. Okay? So we're going to expose some of that authoritarianism that's going on right here. This is one of the most chilling things that I've heard recently. There's been a lot, honestly, but the new New York City governor, who was not elected, by the way, she was not elected. She took over because Andrew Cuomo had to resign because of sexual harassment allegations. Not because he killed thousands of elderly people due to COVID by throwing COVID-positive patients into nursing homes where the most vulnerable people were, you know. Oh, hey. Let's put sick people with a novel virus with all the old people who have compromised immune systems. Like, you're already more vulnerable when you're old. And he took COVID-positive patients, put them in the nursing homes. And where was the media? Silent. Completely silent. But, CNN was happy to put that COVID death tracker up there the whole time Trump was in office and said Trump's responsible for every death from COVID. But they haven't said that once about Biden. Not once. They have not said that once about Biden. Just keep your eyes open. If anything isn't applied equally, you know where the spin is. So the New York governor, she is given a speech, and she talks with like really religious language about the vaccination. Like they're worshiping science, okay? And then she said that she's going to sign an executive order to grant herself power. And the first thing that came to my mind was Caesar, right? So... for those of you who didn't pay attention in history class, you know, Julius Caesar, emperor of Rome. He was appointed emperor. Rome had a democracy. They appointed him emperor during a wartime. And then he said, I'm just going to keep power for myself. And then what happens? He gets assassinated. Okay, like that's how regimes fall. But he granted himself power after he was elected or democratically placed in power. And then he got assassinated by basically his people said that this isn't right. He's taken too much power. He's circumventing the system. And this is not what we designed our democracy to be. And so not that I'm advocating or want anyone to get assassinated, God forbid, but like when you begin just taking power from people, it can cause some crazy things to happen. And it doesn't make people like you more. And I think this is why we're hearing a lot more chants of let's go Brandon. If anyone has seen that, we all know they were not chanting let's go Brandon at the NASCAR race. But so this New York governor, she said, I prayed a lot to God during this time. And you know what? God did answer our prayers. It's Governor Hochul. She said, he made the smartest men and women, the scientists, the doctors, the researchers. He made them come up with a vaccine. That is from God to us. And we must say, thank you, God. Thank you. And I wear my vaccinated necklace all the time to say I'm vaccinated. So she wants to use outward appearances. She wants to use symbols to prove to people that she's vaccinated, to show her fealty to the God of science that she's vaccinated. Okay, and then she continues and she says, all of you, yes, I know you're vaccinated. You're the smart ones. So now getting a vaccine means you're smart. And she continues, but you know there's people out there who aren't listening to God and what God wants. You know who they are. So she's using this as a divisive tactic to split the country. If you got the vaccine, you're smart. Whether you chose to get it or not, whether you were mandated to get it or not, regardless of what decision you and your doctor may have come to. Maybe, you know what? What if you're immunocompromised and can't get the vaccine? Are you no longer smart because you didn't take the vaccine? Like, this is so, like, she is blatantly trying to split the population up. She's trying to split religious people up. She's trying to replace religion with the vaccine and the government. They want you, these authoritarians in the government, want you to worship the government. Okay? If you do any research, if you do any reading on communism and socialism and Marx, government is the religion. And I'm not advocating for any religion. You know, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, whatever it may be, what these authoritarians want is government to be the be-all, end-all. Government is God in their eyes. Control and power, the elites, are the ones who have all the control. That's what they want. They want you to look to government for all of your needs. They don't want you looking to a higher power. They don't want you looking inside yourself. They only want you looking to the government. And they will use any tactic that they can to divide you and to get you hooked on the government's steady flow of everyone else's tax dollars. So that was pretty chilling and frankly, very infuriating. Just the way that she's trying to pit people against each other and just be so absolutely just like gaudy and garish with, oh, I have a vaccinated necklace. Like, get out of here. No one cares. No one wants that. Like, what's she going to wear next? Tell non-vaccinated people to wear stars? I mean, I know it's a Holocaust reference, but like, this is what it's getting to. Okay. They're wanting to have people have different classes based on whether you're vaccinated or not. They want to have vaccine cards and wear the masks and do all that. Like, keep your eyes open. You don't have vaccine cards for any other vaccine you've ever taken in your entire life. Why is this one any different? Especially considering it came out a year and a half ago. There are no long-term studies on it. And also, it doesn't work the same as a normal vaccine. It does not prevent you from getting sick. It just prevents your illness from being as severe. Okay? Like, that's what this does. This vaccine prevents your illness from being as severe. People can still get sick. while on this vaccine. I've not heard anything when you got the polio vaccine of people getting polio, and haven't heard anything of people who got the MMR vaccine of getting measles, mumps, or rubella. I've not heard anyone who got the chickenpox vaccine getting chickenpox. But this one, it doesn't work like a normal vaccine, guys. It's a preventative remedy, I guess. But it doesn't give you immunity. It's not an immunization. It defies the definition of the word. It's just a pre-treatment, essentially. So next, our authoritarian former vice president in chief, who wants to bear as much power from the federal government down upon the states and businesses as he possibly can, he's finally sent his rule to OSHA after the threat from, what, 2-3 months ago, maybe? Yeah, I think it was 2 months ago. That rule has finally been sent to OSHA, and they're going to try to get it passed as like an emergency rule. This emergency rule is only going to be in place, I think, for 90 days is all it can be in place for, but the fees are pretty exorbitant. Because then, once that rule falls out of effect, it takes usually about 18 months for a OSHA rule to go through all of the vetting, which shows you exactly how efficient our bureaucratic industries are. OSHA is such a joke. If anyone who's worked in the construction industry or any industry similar to that, you know exactly how garbage and stupid OSHA is. Some of their rules are just completely moronic. But, you know, they're a government agency, and you got to follow them. So that rule's finally been sent through. Doubt it's going to stand. A lot of people are going to fight this rule. There's going to be a lot of lawsuits. And it could have some pretty wide-ranging effects on the scope and power of these federal bureaucracies moving forward. So I'm kind of hoping that it does get sent through, because I would love to see the administrative power of these bureaucratic agencies just get cut to the bone. We have way too many bureaucratic agencies, and they need to be reined in. But also, what our former vice president is trying to do, he's trying to increase the fines on companies from the $14,000 in the OSHA rule to $70,000. That's 70 with 3 zeros after it, $70,000. And then up to $700,000 for repeat offenders. So he's trying to bankrupt anyone who does not follow along with his mandate. It is the most disgusting overreach of power that I've ever seen in my life. This comes from Forbes. Buried on page 168 of the House Democrats' 2,465-page mega bill. 2,465 pages, okay? If any of you have read Harry Potter, I think the longest book was about 700 pages. This is four of those. Four of the longest Harry Potter books. And these are not, it's not like these are easy to read bills where you can just speed read through. Like 2,465 pages of legal jargon. These are getting ridiculous. But buried on page 168 is a tenfold increase in fines for employers that, quote unquote, willfully, repeatedly, or even seriously violate a section of labor law that deals with hazards, death, or serious physical harm to their employees. The increased fines on employers could run as high as $70,000 for serious infractions and $700,000 for willful or repeated violations. Basically $750,000 for each fine. So if enacted into law, this vaccination enforcement would bankrupt any non-compliant companies more quickly than this $14,000 OSHA fine. And they were trying to sneak this into law in a reconciliation bill. This is ridiculous. Absolute insanity. Like, the lengths they're willing to go to, and they don't want to use reconciliation on this. But reconciliation, this is dangerous because they only need 50 votes. You can use reconciliation twice per year. They only need 50 votes to get this to pass. This is terrifying stuff, guys. Completely terrifying. So, Biden administration, they're trying to fast track this and get it enforced as quickly as possible. And this is really to give companies cover so companies can enforce their own vaccine mandates without the federal government having to. And they basically just like backdoor around it. So they threaten, they threaten, they threaten. If the companies fold, perfect. If not, then they can continue marching forward with this illegal overreach of federal power. But there's some good news. So Joe Biden, our dementia-addled person in the White House, I can't bring myself to call him president anymore because he's just so embarrassing. But he's already made a mandate for all federal employees and contractors to be vaccinated by, I think it's like December 8th, right? And what's been happening is we're seeing a lot of people push back on this because it's not the federal government's job to force and mandate these vaccines. It's not, period, full stop, okay? And the airlines are where we're starting to see this the most. So Southwest, over the weekend of October 9th, so the 9th through the 13th, they canceled 30% of their flights. Over 2,000 flights were canceled that weekend. Now, Southwest, this comes from the AP News. Southwest, they blamed air traffic control. However, air traffic control said there are no FAA air traffic staffing shortages that have been reported. They literally throw Southwest under the bus. As I say, flight delays and cancellations occurred for a few hours Friday afternoon due to widespread severe weather, military training limited staffing in one area of the Jacksonville en route center. But then on October 10th, they say some airlines continue to experience scheduling challenges due to aircraft and crews being out of place. So they literally say, there's nothing wrong on our part. Southwest, this is all on you, without saying Southwest. Because Southwest was the only airline that canceled 30% of their flights that weekend. That's insanity. And Southwest has been dealing with this for most of the summer. Okay, I was a victim of this coming back through Denver. They canceled our flight for no reason. Our flight was on the ground. We could have boarded, but they canceled due to weather. There were clear skies. Clear skies. Canceled. Weather. Makes no sense to me. No sense. A little bit more evidence going for this, though. The Pilots Association for Southwest has asked a judge to block the federal vaccine mandate, which leads me to believe that this was a sick out by a lot of the Southwest pilots to protest this vaccine mandate. Now, the airlines are not technically allowed to strike without first having mediation of some sort. This was from some legislation that happened back in the 80s. But sick outs kind of aren't a strike. So we're starting to see this happen a lot more. I think recently we saw United had some issues this week, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe American Airlines. But people are fed up with this. Sorry, United didn't do it. United, those a-holes, freaking fired anyone who wouldn't get vaccinated. To which Joe Biden then said, oh, they took their vaccination rate from 60% to 99%. Yes, you absolute walking moron. You look like death froze over and have three brain cells left to rub together. The reason they went from 60% vaccination to 99% for their employees is because they fired all of the employees who would not get vaccinated. So thank you, United. Guess who will never have my business ever? Ever. Worst airline I've ever flown in my life. But hopefully we see more airlines, well, more pilots do this, because there is strength in numbers. We outnumber the elite, guys. We have the power. All we have to do is say no. It's just like with the masks, right? If everyone does it and one person doesn't, then they all get, then that one person gets shamed. But if everyone just stopped wearing them, what's the government going to do? What would they have done? Nothing. They would not have done anything because there's strength in numbers, guys. Half of the country disagrees with a lot of this. And I think I would say more than half. Okay, Biden's approval rating is like 38% right now overall. Hey, so let's stand up. Let's start pushing back on all this BS, okay? Like, these authoritarian tactics and this authoritarian BS needs to get thrown under the bus, washed out, and swept away, okay? Like, do not let the government walk all over you. And I'm not saying to riot, but if someone says something that's, you know, blatantly unconstitutional, don't do it. Just a mandate is not a law. It's not a law. Moving on. Here we're going to get into kind of where a blend, there's a bit of a blend between authoritarian in the government and the authoritarian, the cultural authoritarians. We're going to go over the Facebook whistleblower from 60 Minutes. Her name is Frances Haugen. So she leaked private documents to the media and testified in Congress. She leaked these documents to, I think, the New York Times, maybe, back in the spring. And I think Facebook is actually suing her because you're not allowed to leak documents to the media and get whistleblower protections. She has applied for whistleblower protections from the SEC, I believe. But that means you're allowed to leak the documents to the government, not to the media. So she might be in some hot water there, although she is working with lawyers who worked in the Obama administration, just to throw that out there for you in case you're wondering where this woman lines up. So she was a data scientist at Gigster, and she raised concerns that AI is racist. Like, artificial intelligence is racist. These are just mathematical algorithms, you guys. And she said it's racist because math is racist, apparently. But when she went to work for Facebook, she said she wanted to work on misinformation, which that word is never defined in her entire 60 Minutes interview. What is misinformation? Is it information that you don't agree with? Is it information that contradicts the government line, even though it may be true? Like, what is misinformation, right? What is hate speech? These are terms that no one can define, but she talks about ad nauseum in her reporting, or not in her reporting, in her interview, okay? She would work on misinformation and hate speech and all this stuff. So, in this interview, though, she also is talking about studies that show the suicide of teenage girls has been creeping up due to Instagram. So Instagram is causing body image issues with young girls, like body dysmorphia and anorexia, bulimia, suicide. I think 13% increase in suicide girl thoughts from girls in the UK. There's actually a Netflix special that also goes through all of these numbers and links them to social media. So none of this is new. Netflix actually had a documentary on this that came out in 2020 called The Social Dilemma, and it goes through all of the things that are making us addicted to our phones, and you know, so that includes social media, dating apps, Google recommendations. It, again, pretty terrifying. If you're in the IT industry, you know this has been going on for a while, so none of what she brought up is new, but Frances Haugen is using this suicide of teenage girls as a Trojan horse because she wants more government control over Facebook, which is a private company. So she wants Facebook to become government adjacent, right? She wants there to be a oversight board that's headed by people who perhaps have worked at Facebook who can then manage and oversee Facebook. So she's trying to advocate a position for herself in the government so she can be the boss of Mark Zuckerberg. Like, get out of here, first of all. Second of all, no company should be just get taken over by some governmental oversight board. No private company should. So she's using the suicide of teenage girls, which is an issue, as a Trojan horse, though, for more government control of a private company, of a social media source. Also, she was employed at Facebook during the election. She's employed there when the Hunter Biden story would have come out, and Facebook actively engaged in suppressing that story. So she would have been instrumental, her team would have, for misinformation. Her team would have absolutely known about and been instrumental in covering up the Hunter Biden story. So just to give you some ideas of how she lines up, what she wants to do to this private company, she thinks that Facebook is not censoring enough. She thinks that the government should tell Facebook how it should run. She wants government control of a private industry, which is communism. Okay? That's what she wants. She wants more government control. There's also Facebook. She talked about Facebook whitelisting certain accounts. And these are accounts that are not held to the same standard as others. And that's ridiculous, right? This clearly shows that Facebook is a publisher, which we will get to in just a second. Now, if we want to talk about actual whistleblowers who wanted to shine a light on some practices that Facebook is implementing that are blatantly anti-freedom and clearly skewing people's views in a certain way, let's talk about Project Veritas, okay? Project Veritas, tons and tons of actual investigative reporting going on. People trying to disparage them, say they're using misleading journalism, whatever. These are all hidden camera interviews with people at these companies or whistleblowers from these companies that come forward and put themselves on the record, cost them their jobs, okay? None of these people have been verified on Twitter or Instagram or anywhere else. Well, Frances Haugen hasn't been verified on Instagram, but verified on Twitter. None of these other Facebook whistleblowers have, but Frances Haugen has. What does that tell you, first of all? So, the first one, there's a leak from a Facebook employee about basically a Facebook all hands. And Zuckerberg is on there, and he literally talks about working with and partnering with the government. He says there are clips in there that say governments believe that Facebook has too much power, and Zuckerberg agrees. One of the quotes, this comes from louderwithcrowder.com, because they have already reported on this story. Zuckerberg says, "We agree that we have too much power. Ideally, we wouldn't be taking these censorship decisions on our own. We would be taking these with decisions in line with and in conformity with democratically agreed rules and principles. At the moment, those democratically agreed rules don't exist." So Zuckerberg wants some input from the government. Okay. But I don't think he wants to actually be managed by it. But he clearly wants to align with the democratic government that's currently in place. He said, "President Biden already issued a number of executive orders on areas that we as a company really care deeply about." So they're not hiding their bias, right? And they're a private company, okay? But be honest about it. Don't program your algorithm to downgrade conservative sources and upgrade democratic sources or leftist sources because that's what you do. Like, if you're going to do that, be honest about it. Don't advertise as a platform. And guess what? That makes you a publisher. That doesn't make you a platform because now you're curating content. When you curate content, you're a publisher, like the New York Times, like a newspaper. You're curating content. You're not moderating comments. There's a difference. Next, we have Project Veritas. A Facebook data technician, his name is Morgan Kahneman, he goes on the record about something called a vaccine hesitancy score. This is something Facebook came up with about demoting comments that go against the vaccine narrative. So using machine learning and AI, they would find borderline things like borderline vaccine comments, which, and this is kind of scary, They are potentially or actually true stories or comments that could raise safety concerns. This is why you're seeing fact checks on obituaries. Someone dies of the vaccine, and then there's a fact check on the obituary. Because these stories are actually true, but they could make somebody be vaccine hesitant. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely insane. There's no reason that Facebook has any business fact checking obituaries or keeping you from reading information that could inform your decision about a medical treatment. Okay? So why would Facebook want to downgrade or censor a comment about somebody who died from the vaccine when you might have an appointment with your doctor tomorrow and you might want to bring that up? It's not Facebook. Facebook's not a doctor. Okay? They're a platform where people can post what they want. If they're a platform, they can say what they want. AT&T and Verizon don't get to, you know, listen in on my conversations and bleep out anything I say that they think might potentially raise safety concerns about a vaccine. No, they're a platform. Facebook is no longer operating as a platform. They're operating as a publisher. And that's what these actual whistleblowers are showing. Okay? Another one. At the beginning of this pandemic, Zuckerberg emailed Fauci about a unified message about COVID and the vaccination policy. You can find, I already covered a lot of these emails in episode one about Fauci's emails. You can find these, I'll link to it in the description. They're from a FOIA request. And there's some kind of scary things in there. So they redact things due to company secrets, trade secrets is what they say. However, when you read through them, it doesn't sound like it's a trade secret, okay? So Zuckerberg's email to Anthony Fauci, I'll just read the whole thing so you guys get the full context, and you can judge it from there. All right, ready? Here it goes. Tony, I wanted to send a note of thanks for your leadership and everything you're doing to make our country's response to this outbreak as effective as possible. I also wanted to share a few ideas of ways we could help you get your message out, but I understand you're incredibly busy, so don't feel a need to reply unless these seem interesting. This isn't public yet, but we're building a coronavirus information hub that we're going to put at the top of Facebook for everyone, 200 plus million Americans, 2.5 billion people worldwide, with two goals. One, make sure people can get authoritative information from reliable sources, and two, encourage people to practice social distance and give people ideas for doing this using internet tools. This will be live within the next 48 hours. As a central part of this hub, I think it would be useful to include a video from you because people trust and want to hear from experts rather than just a bunch of agencies and political leaders. This could be done in a number of formats if you're open to it. Probably best would be recording a Q&A where you answer people's top questions, but we'd be open to other formats too. I'm also doing a series of live-streamed Q&As with health experts to try to use my large following on the platform, 100 million followers, to get authoritative information out as well. I'd love to have you do one of these Q&As. This could be the video we put in the coronavirus hub, or it could be a different thing that we distribute separately, but I think it could be effective as well. Finally, the next paragraph is redacted entirely. Then he continues, again, I know you're incredibly busy, so don't feel the need to respond if this doesn't seem helpful. If it's easy to talk live, give me a call anytime on my mobile number, which is then blanked out due to redaction, and then thanks again for everything you're doing, Mark. So that was Zuckerberg's email to Fauci. I would love to know what you guys think about what could have been redacted in that finally phrase. I don't feel like an entire phrase could be trade secrets, or an entire paragraph would be trade secrets. It seems to me, like there could be maybe talk of algorithm downgrading or maybe some, borderline vaccine content, something of that nature, misinformation filtering, just a thought, you know? But just my two cents on the matter. And then this is where, in my opinion, the smoking gun gets even worse. This is an email from Courtney Billett to Anthony Fauci about the Mark Zuckerberg email. He says, per email below, Mark Zuckerberg has extended a few offers to do videos with you that we would be happy to seek clearance on for you to do, if you are amenable. These would have the weight and impact of television, really more so. Please advise if you want to do, and we will seek clearance with VP office and work with Patty to sort out the logistics. But an even bigger deal is his offer, and then it's completely blacked out and redacted. The sooner we get that offer up the food chain, the better. I gave Bill Hall a heads up about this opportunity, and he is standing by to discuss this with HHS and WH Comms, but I didn't want him to do anything without you being aware of the offer. Is it okay if I hand this aspect off to Bill to determine who the best point of contact would be so the administration can take advantage of this offer soonest? Do you plan to call MZ? His cell number is in the message below. So, this, then, seems to be the same redacted information from Mark Zuckerberg's email. What could his offer have possibly been? That is a trade secret. Just a thought, something to sit on, think about a little bit. Trade secret. But it's an offer to Anthony Fauci. I wonder if it could be about content moderation or censorship or removing potentially misleading comments. Just a thought. Just a thought. Next, we have a content monitor, or content moderator, rather, from Facebook. He alleges in his Project Veritas video, and again, these videos are way too long for me to go into in this podcast for you guys, but I highly recommend you go check them out. I will have all of the links in the description. I highly, highly, highly recommend you go and watch them. They are pretty damning about some of the just insane ways that Facebook rigs the game and really spins the information that you see in favor of the left. So he alleges that Facebook rigs the game for the left, and that there's an institutional bias against conservatives. Throughout his whole interview with Project Veritas, you know, he talks about how there's recordings of people saying, man, if I walked in here with a MAGA hat, you know, I'd get torn to shreds. There's what appeared to be another content moderator saying Trump supporters are all a bunch of crazy a-holes, and every other word out of their mouth is come and take it this. And then you have other people at Facebook who are saying that they would give Donald Trump to a terrorist organization. They're like, keep the $80 million, it'll save our country. And there's an extreme bias against conservatives and the right. So there's a heavy culture of groupthink at Facebook is what this whistleblower is alleging. He also alleges that he was passed over promotions and actually had an interview with someone else from the company that said he should have had these promotions but did not get them specifically because he was white. So lots and lots of things in all of these Project Veritas videos. I highly recommend you go watch them for the full content, full context. Pretty chilling. So this gets us to Section 230. Section 230, for those of you who are not aware, it's part of the Communications Act. And the relevant part here is the protection for Good Samaritan blocking and screening of offensive material. It says, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. So this is saying that a provider can't be treated as a publisher provided by anyone else. Then also civil liability. It says, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be held liable on account of any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable, whether or not such material is constitutionally protected or any action taken to enable or make available to information content providers or others the technical means to restrict access to material described in paragraph one. So the issue here is the good faith argument, because many, many, many of these content providers, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Google, are not acting in good faith because they are removing things that they simply disagree with and are acting as publishers. So they should lose their protection. So there's two things that need to happen here. Section 230 needs to be rewritten completely. It is far too broad with way too many loopholes because, you know, what's determined to be harassing, right? Is it, I think you're dumb, I think you're a doo-doo head? Is that harassing or otherwise objectionable? These are very big, broad, wide terms that need to be narrowed down and specified. And then also good faith, because we know these companies are not acting in good faith. Period. Full stop. And you can see this in things like these whistleblower videos from Project Veritas. You can see it in The Social Dilemma. Glenn Beck has a really good interview with somebody who's done a lot of research into Google, how Google suppresses things. And a lot of times what the Google autocomplete will do is it will suppress, for somebody who has no history, it will suppress negative headlines about left-leaning figures. So there's a lot of really good information out there. I will link to all of these in the description. But then it needs to be rewritten, and Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, they all need to lose their protections as a platform. Now, this does not mean they need to have government oversight boards. It means they need to have the protections from being sued by individuals in federal court removed because they are no longer acting as platforms. Okay? They need to be less protected from the government. The government is protecting them. They need to have that protection removed. That's what it comes down to. Speaking of government protection and all the power that our federal government has now, let's turn our attention to the Department of Justice focusing on unruly parents at school board meetings. So coming out of the Washington Post, the National School Board Association, so NSBA, has asked President Biden for federal resources to help monitor emerging threats. The letter was dated on September 29th. Days before the Attorney General's memo was released, and made various requests of federal agencies, including the Justice Department. This memo by the Justice Department and Merrick Garland, who is far more radical than anyone could have imagined, was released on October 4th. So this letter says, acts of malice, violence, and threats against public school officials could be the equivalent to a form of domestic terrorism and hate crimes. The Washington Post goes on to say, most disturbingly, on page 4, the NSBA letter references Scott Smith, the Loudoun County, Virginia parent who was arrested for protesting at a school board meeting in June. Now, this will be important when we get to the actual specifics of Scott's circumstances, okay? So they were implying that his behavior was extremist and warranting action from federal law enforcement, said Christina Pushaw, a spokesman for Ron DeSantis. Smith's supposed crime, he attempted to protest a Loudoun school's cover-up of his 14-year-old daughter's sexual assault by a transgender classmate in her school bathroom. Now, just to make sure that I don't get banned on any of these media platforms, this person may just be a bisexual who likes to wear a dress. Regardless, being a male, you should not be in female bathrooms, period. There are biological differences. You still have all the parts. You're a man. You're a dude. You don't get to go in women's spaces, period, full stop. Next, according to a Loudoun County Sheriff's Department, in July, more than a month after an alleged assault at Stonebridge High School on May 28th, a 14-year-old male was arrested in the case with two counts of forcible sodomy. The same teen reportedly was charged with sexually assaulting another alleged female victim at a different high school last week. So, May 28th is when this assault happened. He was not arrested until July. And in that space of time, this 14-year-old boy was able to sexually assault another girl at a different high school. We're going to get a lot deeper into this when we talk about the actual, we'll talk about the actual case here. There was some investigative reporting done by Daily Wire to give you all the context you need on this, and it's absolutely infuriating. Smith, the father of the first alleged victim, was found guilty of disorderly conduct and resisting arrest after an altercation at his local school board meeting in June, which Smith says he attended to protest how his daughter's case was handled. Deputies dragged him to the ground, then outside, where he continued struggling and arguing with them, threatening to kick their teeth out. Loudon now reported. In citing Mr. Smith's case as an example of behavior that justifies a federal crackdown, the NSBA letter asked the Biden administration to deploy federal law enforcement to silence and intimidate parents who have grave concerns that deserve to be heard, Pushaw said. The Loudon County School Board is not the victim in this case, and that's exactly right. If a child is raped in a school, and the school board and the school are trying to cover this up, which we'll get into what they try to do, they're not the victim, and this father has every right to be outraged and pissed off at this school board. 100%. So, the NSBA, however, is trying to use their national platform to basically bully the federal government into cracking down at these school board meetings. Coming out of the Daily Wire, state-level school boards in Arkansas, Florida, Louisiana, Missouri, Montana, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia have issued statements blasting the NSBA over its September 29th letter to the Biden administration. School boards in New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Texas have said that the NSBA did not reach out to them before writing to President Joe Biden, according to the Washington Examiner. While recognizing alarming incidents and comments, which extend beyond civic discourse at school board meetings, the Florida School Boards Association, FSBA, said the NSBA letter called for federal overreach and should be retracted. Several elements of your letter run counter to the tenets embraced by the FSBA, and this communication has caused serious concerns, conflict, and consternation for many of our members within the FSBA. The FSBA wrote in an October 11 response. Not only has it unnecessarily distracted from the important work being carried out by our members, it has strained important local and state collaborative relationships our members have worked hard to build and maintain for years. So the NSBA is using their national platform to lobby the federal government to leverage their power against the individual U.S. citizen. This is absolute insanity. This shows you that the government no longer believes that it works for you. These are civil servants. Okay, and the people who have been appointed to these bureaucratic agencies, they have no commitment to you. They don't give two shits about you. They don't care. Okay, and more we're seeing the elected officials who are supposed to be serving us, the American people, don't care either. All they want is their power. They want to shove their version of the United States down your throat. Okay, using any means necessary, using every bit of power they can scratch and scrape together. So, Katie Pavlich has an opinion out of the Hill, and she writes, Garland's memo comes after Virginia parents in Loudoun and Fairfax counties regularly confronted leftist school board members about teachers' unions refusing to go back to in-person learning, draconian coronavirus restrictions, pornographic material in school libraries, and the implementation of destructive, divisive, critical race theory, CRT. It also comes on the heels of a letter to President Biden from the National School Board Association asking him to classify parents as domestic terrorists. Neither the Attorney General's memo nor the full Justice Department press release cites any significant credible threat, Manhattan Institute's senior fellow Christopher Rufo tweeted in response to the memo. This is a blatant suppression tactic designed to dissuade citizens from participating in the democratic process at school boards. Parents aren't engaged in harassment or intimidation. Instead, they are simply engaged in holding public school officials accountable for indoctrinating their children with pornographic images and the hate-fueled CRT. Parents showing up to verbally question and criticize public school officials isn't violence or intimidation. It is their right and duty to do so, especially as taxpayers in the public school system. So this parents are trying to silence parents when parents are reading out of assigned reading from their children's homework. And some of the passages that these children are being assigned to read is absolutely disgusting and has no place, no place in school at all. There are graphic, pornographic, homosexual descriptions in these books. There's, you know, it talks about children sucking some other dude off. It talks about other sexual scenarios. Like, children shouldn't be reading this. And when parents read these word for word from the book that their children were assigned, the school boards try to shut them down by saying, excuse me, there are children here. And that's the entire point. There are children there. And children should not be assigned these readings. But they don't want a light shined on this because they want to be able to indoctrinate your students, your children, without any oversight, because they don't believe that they are answerable to you. And now that parents are standing up at these school boards and shining a light on all the BS that's happening, they don't like it. They do not like being held accountable for their actions. But do not let them deceive you. They are civil servants. They are answerable to you all the way up the board, all the way up to and including the former Vice President Joe Biden. They are elected to serve the American people. They are not elected to be some elite class of citizen who knows better than we do. They don't know how to handle our money better than we do. They don't know how to raise our kids better than we do. They are elected to advocate for us in these federal, local governing bodies. That's what they're meant to do. And if they're not doing that, then it is our job as citizens to band together and hold them accountable. And I'm not talking any sort of violence or anything like that. You can go to school board meetings. You can go to town halls. You need to stand up and hold these civil servants accountable because they don't want to do it. They do not believe that they should be held accountable. They don't believe that they are answerable to you. There's a video of Joe Biden when he's confronted by a potential voter before he was elected. And he said, the worker says, you know, he's questioning him, and Joe Biden gets irritated and angry because he's an incompetent piece of crap. And he yells at the guy and says, I don't work for you. And that is exactly wrong. 100% wrong. And you'll see this video on Facebook, and it's going to, the fact checkers, right, are going to come and say, this is lacking context. No, it's not. It's not lacking context. We saw it. We heard it with our own eyes and ears. Joe Biden does not believe he is answerable to the public. Neither do these school boards. And it's time they are held accountable. So, moving on in Katie's opinion piece, she says, it says, it has a chilling effect. It's really confusing when you look at this memo. What is harassing? Is it a mean, snarky tweet? What's intimidation? Is it going to speak at a school board meeting and raising your voice? Former DOJ official and executive director of Fight for Our Schools, Ian Pryor, said during an interview on Fox News. He continues with, what you're seeing now is unprecedented. When I was there, talking about the DOJ, they would go after MS-13, and now I guess they're going after moms of 13-year-olds. And again, this is how the authoritarians are trying to use bureaucratic institutions to suppress and force down their view of America on the American people. Whether we want it or not, they're going to try and do it. We cannot let them. You have to wake up to this. Because at this point, we're halfway down a really slippery slope. Whether it's vaccine mandates, DOJ targeting people, Facebook working hand in hand with the government, and Instagram and Twitter and all of them working together, we have to make sure that we hold our officials accountable. And when they do things that we don't support, they need to hear about it. They need to be voted out. It needs to be done. They have been a elite ruling class for too long. They are civil servants. But to go even further and get into this Loudoun County, because this is just absolutely, it's disturbing, and every single person needs to know about this entire story to understand exactly how heinous and terrible this is. So, first of all, the Loudoun County Schools, they tried to conceal sexual assault against this man's daughter in a bathroom. Okay? And this is coming out of the Daily Wire by Luke Rosiak. So, on June 22nd, Scott Smith was arrested. This is what we just talked about. A meeting that was ultimately deemed an unlawful assembly after many attendees vocally opposed a policy on transgender students. So, juvenile records are sealed, but Smith's attorney, Elizabeth Lancaster, told the Daily Wire that a boy was charged with 2 counts of forcible sodomy, 1 count of anal sodomy, and 1 count of forcible fellatio related to an incident that day at that school. This is the father's daughter who was raped. Okay? So, furthermore, it says, if someone would have sat and listened for 30 seconds to what Scott had to say, they would have been mortified and heartbroken. Minutes before Smith's arrest, the Loudoun County Public Schools superintendent lectured the public that concerns about the transgender policy were misplaced because the school system had no record of any assault occurring in any bathroom. This is a month after his daughter was raped in a bathroom by a bisexual boy wearing a skirt or a transgender boy wearing whatever. It's ridiculous. So then, and here's even better, a woman wearing a rainbow heart shirt told Smith she did not believe his daughter. So it's believe all women, except when it goes against the transgender community? Are you've got to be kidding me with the double standards here. Okay? So, this caused Smith's rage to reach a boil, and he had a heated exchange of words with the woman. Then a police officer pulled on his arm, Smith yanked it away, and then he was hit in the face, handcuffed, and dragged across the floor with his pants pulled down. This is the video that you will see online. Okay? So, on October 6th, the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office confirmed that a 15-year-old was charged with sexual battery and abduction after police said he forced a girl into an empty classroom, held against her will, and touched her inappropriately. Lancaster says the suspect is the same boy that allegedly attacked Smith's daughter. And then what follows, what we're going to talk about, is based on extensive reporting from Loudoun County, from the Daily Wire. All right, here we go. On May 28th, Stonebridge High School called Smith to come to the school, and they told him that his 15-year-old daughter had been physically assaulted in a bathroom by a male. When he arrived, he determined that what had happened was not his daughter being beaten up. It was far worse. The school then said that it was handling the incident in-house. Smith was dumbfounded. Now, I don't understand how a school is going to handle a crime in-house when that should be reported to the authorities. That's insane to me. Any crime committed on school grounds should be reported directly to authorities. But, continuing. Deputies from the sheriff's office ultimately responded to the school not to investigate the alleged rape of a child, but because school administrator called them on him for making a scene. And he did. He made a scene. He said he went nuts. He called the principal a female body part. And he said 6 cop cars showed up like a effing SWAT team to respond to the school's complaint about an assertive parent. Okay. So he said, thank God that he drew enough attention to it without getting arrested, that they got an escort to the hospital and they administered a rape kit that night. A SANE exam, SANE exam, and a buccal swab, his lawyer said, later came back favorable to the prosecution's case. So this means that his daughter was raped in a bathroom, a school bathroom, by a male and was confirmed with a rape kit. Okay? So, at 4:48 p.m. then on that day, the principal sent out an email to the community that claimed nothing jeopardizing student safety had occurred and painted Smith as the villain and offered counseling services for the witness of Smith's blow-up. Here's the email. Good evening, Stonebridge families. This is Stonebridge Principal Tim Flynn. There was an incident in the main office area today that required the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office to dispatch deputies to Stonebridge. The incident was confined to the main office and the entrance area to the school. There was no threat to the safety of the student body. The incident was witnessed by a small number of students who were meeting with staff adjacent to the main office. Counseling services and the services of our Unified Mental Health Team are available for any student who may need to talk about today's incident. Students might have noticed Sheriff's Office personnel on campus, and I wanted to let you know that something out of the ordinary happened at school today. The safety of our students and staff is the top priority of Loudoun County Public Schools. So, Loudoun County Public Schools called the cops on Smith and then proceeded to tell the entire community that him being irate at his daughter getting raped was the issue, was the reasoning behind it. And they don't even acknowledge that a student, a male student, sexually assaulted a female student that day. You have got to be kidding me. Absolute insane. Absolute insanity. So then Smith goes to the school board meeting on June 22nd, and the focus of the discussion was a proposal expanding special protections to transgender students. This is a month after his daughter has been raped, by the way. So Smith says, "My wife and I are gay and lesbian friendly. We're not into this children transgender stuff. The person that attacked our daughter is apparently bisexual and occasionally wears dresses because he likes them." So this kid's technically not what the school board was fighting about. The point is, kids are using it as an advantage to get into the bathrooms. So, from the dais, school board director Beth Bartz painted such concerns as paranoia and prejudice. "Our students do not need to be protected and they are not in danger," she said. "Do we have assaults in our bathrooms or locker rooms regularly?" First of all, the question shouldn't be, do you have sexual assaults in bathrooms or locker rooms regularly? They should not be happening, period, and you should not give an opening for someone to go and do this, okay? Why would you give somebody a reasonable protection to go into an area where they do not belong? Why would you give males, especially high school age males, the protection to go into a women's room saying that they identify as a female or wear a dress, to give them access to women's spaces? You've got to be kidding me. That is hands down a threat. Just having men in women's only spaces is much more threatening than having women in men's spaces, period. But either way, the spaces should be separated based on biology, period. Not gender identity. That's ridiculous. And then, here's the kicker. So after the school board member asked that question, the superintendent says, "To my knowledge, we don't have any record of assaults occurring in our restrooms." One happened exactly a month earlier. And then board chair Brenda Sheridan says, "Have we had any issues involving transgender students in our bathrooms or locker rooms?" Ziegler answered, "Time magazine in 2016 called that a red herring, that the data was simply not playing out that transgender students were more likely to assault cisgender students in restrooms than were other students. In fact, regardless of the gender identity of the student, if a crime or violation of the rules were committed, that would be investigated and dealt with to the full extent of the rules or the law. I think it's important to keep our perspective on this. We've heard it several times tonight from our public speakers, but the predator, transgender student, or person simply does not exist." This is a false statement. False statement. Smith tried to contain himself as activists who prioritize lived experience, quote unquote, and believe women, quote unquote, ignored his daughter. So, nearly 250 members of the public had signed up to speak, and many of them were critical of the school's racial and transgender initiatives. Others were supporters of the transgender policy who painted their neighbors as ignorant bigots, with one saying, "Hate was dripping from the followers of Jesus in this room." Opponents booed at the remark, and the board threatened to stop the meeting if participants were loud again. Which, this is crazy, because booing and being loud is not anything to stop a school board meeting over. Okay? Things can get a little rowdy. Not everything is going to be sunshine and daisies, especially when we're discussing highly, highly controversial policies, and when parents are advocating for their children, to keep their children in safe spaces. Another speaker blasted school board for suspending a teacher named Tanner Cross for speaking in opposition to a transgender proposal during the public comment portion of a previous meeting. The crowd cheered and the board shut the meeting down. Two courts later ruled that the teacher, Cross, must be reinstated. This is a public body censoring the public as a result of complaining about earlier censorship. So, infamously, far-left board member Bart was elected in 2019 with 55% of the vote. She has lashed out at parents who disagree with progressive and teacher union-backed policies so often and with such vitriol that her peers, most of whom agreed with her views, censured her and stripped her of her committee assignment. So this Bart is just a vile human being. She retreated to a Facebook group known as the Anti-Racist Parents of Loudoun County and later known to critics as Chardonnay Antifa. This is where she was coming up with parents, like, and trying to out them and dox them. This was populated by other progressive government officials, teachers, and a small but highly engaged faction of activist-minded community members. I'm losing my hope that remaining civil towards these people changes anything, one member wrote. Avoiding these people isn't enough to stop the spread of their evil rhetoric. Bart told the group that ethics rules were making it difficult for her to identify and call out such parents by name and asked for help. The group took the hint and took up the banner. So, this group was hacking parents who questioned school board policies. They were hacking their social media accounts and exposing these people publicly. They were doxing these people. They set out to make a list of parents who pose a risk to their school policy agenda, replete with their spouses' names, areas of residence, and employers. This is absolute social authoritarianism. 100%. You're getting a small mob of people to just go after, not by using any official means, but they're doxing people. They're finding out their spouses, their addresses, their employers, and then they're going to use that information to put social pressure on these people to shut up. Oh, if you speak out against a policy, we're going to go to your employer and call you a bigot. If you speak out against this policy, we're going to blast your address and hold a protest in front of your house. This is social authoritarianism. This is cultural authoritarianism. And this is absolutely has no place in a civil society. This is ridiculous. And the fact that a school board member was the creator of this group, it should be criminal. It 100% should be criminal that somebody who is using a publicly elected position to attack and intimidate parents of their own jurisdiction, that should be criminal. So, back to the Daily Wire. Less understood until now is that these initiatives were not necessarily limited to behind a keyboard. A frequent participant in the group was a woman named Jackie Schworm, S-C-H-W-O-R-M. And she says, "Does anyone have a list of the parents who organized against the diversity library books?" Schworm posted, according to records subpoenaed from Facebook pursuant to a sheriff's criminal investigation into the group. Schworm volunteered to find information about parents who disagreed with school policies, writing of one, "I'll see what I can find out. She blocked me a while ago." One member wrote that a conservative school board member, John Beatty, had once spoken to parents at a church and told attendees they should tell the schools what they want taught. Another member replied with an idea to convince the Southern Poverty Law Center to list disfavored local groups as hate groups, then cite that designation to give ammunition for the school board to have them banned from speaking publicly at meetings. Okay, so these absolute socialists have so much ingrained institutional power because they've infiltrated every single organization that has any power behind it. Okay, they've infiltrated schools, they've infiltrated legal organizations, they've infiltrated school boards, they've infiltrated the top levels of our government. Okay, So they want to band together and use the tendrils of their influence to get the Southern Poverty Law Center or some other group to label other groups as hateful and then say this is an authoritative source that says this group is hate speech or this is a hate group. And they want to use that to silence their political opposition. This is straight out of the Marxist playbook. This is absolute insanity. And it's so bad. It's everywhere. And we have to be vigilant about this. So, Schwerm was at the June 22nd school board meeting wearing a shirt with a rainbow heart on it. This is the woman who did not believe Smith's daughter. So, as a Girl Scout troop leader, Jess had mentioned Schwerm's daughter. Smith and Jess said Schwerm sought them out in the crowd, demanded to know which side they were on, then berated them that they were wrong. So, Smith asked his wife, Jess, who is this? And Jess replied, I thought she was my friend. Smith tried to tell her what happened to his daughter, and she looks him dead in the eyes and says, that's not what happened. Schwerm noticed that Smith was wearing a shirt with the name of his plumbing business on it, and she goes, oh, I'm going to ruin your business on social media. Smith replied with, you're a bitch, Smith told her. Video shows a police officer monitoring the tension-filled exchange pulled on Smith's arm. He yanked it away, and soon Smith and the officer were wrestling. Other officers pinned Smith to the ground, bloodying his lip in the process as Smith uttered, I can't breathe. Jess cried out in words lost in the chaos, my child was raped at school, and this is what happens. Smith was then charged with disorderly conduct and resisting arrest. Has anyone seen this in the media anywhere? I certainly haven't. Why is it that Daily Wire, a relatively small, conservative news and opinion outlet, has an exclusive on this? You have ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, freaking all of these major networks with monster budgets. Nothing about this? Not a single thing? Come on. Come on. This is a Daily Wire exclusive? Like, nothing against their reporters, but this is an exclusive from a company that has about 200 employees compared to every other media company that is gigantic. Unbelievable that this has not been shouted from the rooftops. That entire school board should be the laughingstock of the country right now. But they're not, because the only thing that the mainstream media was reporting was, look at these unruly parents at school board meetings. And to make this journalistic malfeasance even worse, no one in the mainstream media seemed to cover the fact that this happened again. No. Not someone being arrested at a school board meeting. No. The sexual assault of another girl by this same criminal at a different school. So, continuing to read from the Daily Wire. On October 6th, the sheriff's office put out a press release that said, a teenager from Ashburn has been charged with sexual battery and abduction of a fellow student at Broad Run High School. The investigation determined on the afternoon of October 6th, the 15-year-old suspect forced the victim into an empty classroom where he held her against her will and inappropriately touched her. A government official told the Daily Wire the name of the student, and it was the same name as the boy who allegedly assaulted Smith's daughter. The prosecutors, with whom Smith and his wife had been communicating about the rape case, never alerted us about the alleged repeat offense. Smith said he did not believe it could actually be the same person. But Smith called his probation officer, and the probation officer said, yep, I put him in juvie yesterday. They contacted the special victims unit detective and said, I can't tell you what happened, but it happened, and it's bad. Jess, Smith's wife, then contacted prosecutors, with whom Jess said, told her that his court date had been postponed from October 14th to October 25th in order to handle both charges together. Smith says, I don't even know why he was at school. Why was this expletive allowed to do this again. There's no reason why this shouldn't be front page news of every single news site, period, full stop. This, the fact that the dad whose daughter was raped has been shown as a victim by the mainstream media, as a unruly a parent at a school board meeting who should be classified as a domestic terrorist, instead of the victim in a sexual assault case, he's defending his daughter to the school board. But they just want to showcase this as rowdy parents at school board meetings. And the policies that are being enacted by these absolute radicals that have gotten in power is allowing men, teenage boys, to assault women and daughters in the system right now. What? Why is somebody allowed to basically have rape somebody, have it confirmed with a rape kit, not be in jail? I don't care what age you are. If you rape somebody, you should be in jail or worse. Period, full stop. It was confirmed with a rape kit. He should never have been in another school. It should never have happened to another person. But why? Because he's covered by the PC police, by these cultural authoritarians who say, oh, you know, you don't know how he feels. Maybe he feels like a woman. No. That's not how this happens. Sorry. Get out. You don't get to use that defense when someone rapes somebody. You shouldn't get to use that defense anywhere, period. Because biology is absolute. Okay? I don't care if mentally you feel like a girl. I can wake up tomorrow and feel like a paraplegic. There's no doctor that's going to let me cut my arm off. Because guess what? That's a mental disorder. But you assign it to gender, to biology, and all of a sudden it becomes a protected class by the PC police. Get out of here. This is ridiculous. This is 100% just absolute governmental, political correct insanity. And this needs to be blasted across the entire country. Everyone should hear about this. Everyone should be pissed off and absolutely just insanely angry about the crap that's going on in our school systems and in our government right now. And it gets worse. The PC police, they don't just have jurisdiction over things that are happening currently. Okay, this cultural authoritarianism. No. They want to go back and get things from 10 years ago. You've seen this in the past with Kevin Hart, who wanted to host the Oscars, but God forbid he had a bad joke on a tweet from 5 years prior and he got canceled for hosting the Oscars. Well, now we have another casualty. Jon Gruden has been fired for 10-year-old emails. This is from NBC News. So the New York Times reported that Jon Gruden had used a gay slur to insult Roger Goodell and said he was clueless and anti-football. Many football fans would agree with that, by the way. He also used an anti-gay slur to say Goodell should not have pressured the Rams to draft Michael Sam, who was the first openly gay player drafted by an NFL team. The paper said Gruden criticized Goodell and the NFL League for trying to reduce concussions and said that Eric Reed, a player who had demonstrated during the playing of the national anthem, should be fired. There were many football fans, by the way, when all of the kneeling was going on, who were saying, if you kneel for the national anthem, you should be fired. If you're protesting the anthem, you're protesting the country, because the anthem is a representation of the country. So if you don't like the country, leave. But the newspaper said Gruden mocked an article in 2017 about players calling on Goodell to support their efforts promoting a racial equality and criminal justice reform. Gruden and Allen have a long relationship, having worked together in Oakland and Tampa Bay. The emails between the two and other men included photos of women wearing only bikini bottoms, including one photo of two Washington team cheerleaders. So, okay, this stuff shouldn't be happening. It does happen, but these are not things to be fired over. They are private, personal emails. However, why were these emails released when they were not even the subject of the investigation that these emails were released for. These emails should never have been released to the press. There was an investigation going on into the workplace culture at the Washington, it was the Redskins, but now they're the Washington football team. I'm never going to get used to saying that. An investigation going on into the workplace culture of the Washington football team. At this time, Gruden was an analyst. He wasn't even a coach. So he wasn't even targeted in this entire investigation. He was not even a person of interest, okay? The fact that someone in this investigation decided to release these emails is absolutely ridiculous. These are private emails. So I hope anyone who's cheering this on, I hope that your history is as sparkling clean as can be. You've never said a bad word. You've never written or typed anything that you might regret. Nothing. I hope you are a perfect person. But the story goes on to say, Gruden also criticized President Barack Obama during his re-election campaign in 2012 and then Vice President Joe Biden. Big whoop. Guess what? Lots of people have done it. I've been doing it. Everyone's been doing it. Because guess what? These two presidents are awful at their job. But again, could this be a politically motivated leak to cost someone his job? Maybe. Cultural authoritarianism. And then, so it says, but make no mistake, the news is not about what is said in our private conversation, but what else is said by people who never thought they would be exposed and how they are going to be held to account, Smith wrote in a Twitter thread. This is DeMaurice Smith, who was at the center of the original emails that landed Gruden in hot water. So Allen is one of Gruden's friends. So essentially, these were two emails between two buddies, okay? So Gruden's comments to Allen about Smith came during the 2011 lockout of the players by the NFL. Gruden told the Wall Street Journal he was angry about the lockout during labor negotiations, and he didn't trust the direction the union was taking. So this email, this is the original thing that caused all of this dust up. He said, Dumboris Smith has lips the size of Michelin tires, Gruden wrote in an email reviewed by the newspaper. So this is it. Everyone's flipping out saying that it's a racial slur. They're gay slurs, whatever. The inciting incident here that caused these emails to be released is because John Gruden said someone has big lips. Get out. This is insane. People, if you're not allowed to talk about people anymore and insult people, granted, insults aren't meant to be nice, but saying somebody has big lips doesn't mean that it's a racial slur. That's ridiculous. There's white people who have big lips. There's black people that have big lips. There's Asians. Like, there are people who have big lips. There are people that pay money to have big lips. I'm pretty sure the Kardashians have done it. And maybe Angelina Jolie. Like, again, these are insults about somebody, not to their face, but to somebody. It's a private conversation. Again, this just highlights, by the way, don't put anything in writing that you don't want used against you at some point in time, ever. Don't record anything that you don't want used against you at some point in time, because people will try and take it out of context. People will try to paint you in the worst possible light. And so, again, they only gave us this snippet. And the fact that someone lost their job over personal emails between him and a friend is ridiculous. And it's, again, more and more cultural authoritarianism. And I don't think Gruden was fired. I think he actually stepped down and he said, I don't want to be a distraction to the team. Well, you should never apologize to the PC police, ever. Don't apologize. Don't step down. Don't give them any more power. Okay? And the only person standing up to the PC police and the cultural authoritarians right now in popular culture, the only big name who's standing up to them is Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle has balls the size of freaking Mount Rushmore. I mean, I swear to God, this guy. He has come out and everyone's pissed. Everyone's furious right now about his new special called The Closer, which if you haven't seen it on Netflix, I would highly, highly recommend you go watch it. It is absolutely phenomenal. I think I'm probably going to watch it again either tonight or tomorrow. So he comes out And one of the things he makes, to make a point, he says, this, I guess it's a rapper. I don't pay attention to rap artists, because first of all, they have terribly stupid names. This guy's called DaBaby. Apparently, this rapper, DaBaby, has shot somebody in a Walmart, okay? So DaBaby shoots somebody in Walmart. Chappelle uses more colorful language than I do. But there was no damage to his career. Most people, I guess, didn't even know what happened. Because he's like, look it up. But DaBaby said something that offended the LGBTQ community, and now they want him canceled. They want him to lose his career. They want him to lose his livelihood. All because he offended. Offending somebody? Hurting their feelings? I'm sorry, Cupcake. This is the real world. If I got, you know, upset every time I was offended, you know, or if I had skin thin enough that I was offended by everything people say, I'd never leave my house. I'd never turn on the TV. I'd never listen to music or the radio or anything, because there's going to be someone somewhere that says something that might potentially possibly offend you. Okay? I'm not doing that shit. That's ridiculous. Grow up. What happened to sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Because that's what they are. They are words. People will say mean things. That doesn't hurt you. Or at least it shouldn't, unless you are a mental midget. Unless you are so weak mentally that you cannot handle the slightest bit of criticism. Okay? So, additionally, on top of this, clearly the trans people, the trans activists who are, I think they staged a walkout at Netflix and now they've been fired. So good on you, Netflix. I don't agree with a lot of what you do, but good on you for firing the people who staged the walkout. The trans people who are offended by this have not watched the special. If they had watched the special all the way through to the end, and I'm not going to give away any of the jokes, but his whole special is about his friend, Stephanie, who was a trans woman, killed herself after getting bullied on Twitter for defending Dave Chappelle. Okay, Dave Chappelle, I guess, said something on Twitter. All the Twitter activists were, you know, dragging him through the mud, whatever. Stephanie, on Twitter, defends him. They dragged her through the mud. Then 6 days later, kills herself. Okay? And you can tell Chappelle is actually torn up about it. And you know what? He says at the end, no more trans jokes until everyone can be sure they're laughing together and not at each other. Because, again, that's what comedy is supposed to be. You're supposed to be laughing together because comedy is edgy. They're jokes. They're not individual outright insults. It's not a difficult concept. But thank God for Dave Chappelle. He's still fighting a good fight. I highly recommend you guys go and watch his special. This was a pretty heavy, pretty long episode. Go and unwind by watching Dave Chappelle, The Closer on Netflix. It's fantastic and really the only person standing up to all of this cultural authoritarianism anymore. This was a long one today, guys. I appreciate you for sticking with me. Hopefully the next one won't be quite as long and quite as deep. But things are getting bad out there. So stay vigilant, and I will talk to you guys later.
Thanks for listening to Unpopular Opinions with Nick. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star review wherever you're listening to your podcast. You can also interact with us on Facebook and Instagram at unpopularopinions.tm. Have a good one.